But if you have some kind of notice or contact from the IRS, take it seriously.
Welcome to episode 6 of Americans Overseas podcast. America is the only first world country in the world that enforces a tax duty on American citizens, wherever they live or work. I'm Linda Mabelis, and today I'm talking about the impact of the US tax system on Americans overseas as seen by tax professionals. We will be sharing opinions on short and long-term developments and hearing about cases about expats and accidental Americans. I will be talking with Daan Deurlacher, experienced expert, and Robert W. Wood, often listed as the top 10 tax lawyer for tax controversies and civil cases. Also a widely published author on Forbes and other renowned media. Mr. Wood is known for explaining and demystifying complex tax concepts. A little disclaimer before we start. We are not certified public accountants or enrolled agents. We're owners of AmericansOverseas.org. The organization helps referring clients to matching CPAs based on language, qualities, and pricing. Welcome, Daan, and welcome to our guest, Robert, in this episode. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you, Linda. Welcome, Robert. I'm honored to have you as an expert on U.S. tax. We discussed this matter before, and we have a couple of questions that we would like to discuss with you and see your opinion about it. As you know, in the discussions we had, we are an organization that is specifically helping U.S. citizens and dual U.S. citizens on tax filing obligations in the U.S. And that tax obligation is based on the fact that the U.S. has a citizen-based taxation. And specifically for this group, filing in two countries is complex. Can you give us some, let's say, specific implications of filing taxes in the U.S. without having ties or any residency in the U.S. as a dual national?
Sure. I wish I could say that it wasn't necessary, but it is. I'm aware of the sort of long efforts of various people to try to change the U.S. system. But what I see as a U.S. tax lawyer is, I, as you might suspect, I tend to see things when they go wrong or people who have problems. So it's certainly clear, although many people don't like this, but it's certainly clear that Americans, wherever they are in the world, are still required to file U.S. tax returns. And I guess there are two broad groups. One is, of course, U.S. citizens, including accidental Americans. They're still required to file annual U.S. tax returns and other forms, FBARs, the foreign account disclosure forms. And the other group that I see would be long-term green card holders, and that are essentially treated as mostly like U.S. citizens for U.S. tax purposes. And most of those long-term green card holders, a green card is a permanent residence card for the U.S. Most of those long-term green card holders are residing in the U.S., but some are not. And so I guess if some of your listeners have a green card but live outside the U.S., it's important to remember that a green card presumes that you are, it's a conclusive presumption that you're a U.S. person. So, you know, it's annual drudgery. You obviously have your home country or resident country tax filings to deal with. Those may or may not be based on a calendar year. You know, that's another whole sort of can of worms I find for people, is filing on a calendar year basis in the U.S., but filing on for example, in the UK, a non-calendar year basis. But it's you know, reporting your U.S., reporting your worldwide income, paying tax, typically claiming a foreign tax credit on your U.S. return on your taxes paid somewhere else. But it's, you know, keeping up with it. And then if you have notices or something like that from the U.S. government, responding to them promptly, I don't know that that's much of a key to success, but that's what we want everyone to do.
And do you see any possibility, like you said in the beginning of your answer, that there are a lot of groups, let's say, trying to change the American tax system, the citizen-based taxation, to resident-based taxation? Do you see any chances that that would develop positively?
I mean, I'm probably not the best worst person to ask. I've been a tax lawyer for 42 years now, so I've seen a lot of things come and go and a lot of proposals come and go. I'm either a realist or even a pessimist, I suppose, just generally. So I'm not the most optimistic person in the world. I mean, I wouldn't say it's never going to happen. I hope that it does, but I think I wouldn't, honestly, personally, I don't expect it to happen. I think the U.S. system is ingrained and I think we're stuck with it. And I hope I'm wrong, but that's my own personal view.
Yeah. Now, let's say this citizen-based taxation has been there forever, almost. But what made it that all of a sudden there is so much awareness? And let's say I found out myself like 6 years ago, I was never aware of the fact that I had to file taxes in the US, and we are helping thousands of US dual US citizens in Europe that are simply not aware of it. What changed this so that all of a sudden people are becoming aware of it?
I can't give you one, or I can't point to one specific thing. I would say for me personally and my firm, there are nine of us tax lawyers. We have a law firm. We're not accountants, but we are tax lawyers and we handle tax planning and tax controversies. And, you know, and getting people into compliance is something that we've seen a lot of. Even though we're physically not preparing the returns, typically somebody else is doing that, an accountant. But I think the pivotal kind of shot heard around the world that I would say started a lot of this would be 2008, when, so it's been a while, when UBS was fighting with the IRS, and ultimately the IRS issued what's called John Doe summonses, basically saying to UBS, you know, we don't know who they are, but we want lists of all your American account holders. And famously, in that litigation, UBS eventually had to give in, I think it was 4,250 originally names, account holders. And, you know, that was kind of the, or to mix metaphors, the shot heard around the world, or perhaps the first domino to fall. And starting after that, Americans with Swiss bank accounts and other offshore bank accounts started to run to the IRS to try to fix their problems, fearing criminal liability. I think a lot of people don't think about it, but in tax return obligations and tax matters are potentially criminal in the U.S. Some countries that's not true, or at least not really true. So starting then, the IRS started with its long campaign to go after people who weren't compliant. That was mostly really aimed at people who were U.S. residents, but the IRS didn't think, at least originally, that it could differentiate between U.S. persons wherever they were. And so, you know, that campaign started, and for 10 years, from 2008 to 2018, there was a massive effort, the Offshore Voluntary Disclosure Initiative, I think it was called originally OVDI, and then it was changed to OVDP program. But I mean, my firm did a large volume of those, and they were expensive, but they were predictable. You know, 8 years of tax returns, 8 years of other forms. It was kind of a prescriptive penalty system, and many people signed up for that and did it, and it worked well. Whether it was fair is a separate question. But I will say that we had some people with really enormous potential liabilities. And there was a way in that system to so-called opt out of the penalty sort of at the end of the program. And instead of paying the big penalties, to have the IRS, you know, propose something less and undergo an audit that would typically result in a much, much less significant penalty. So we did a lot of those too. But that system is now gone. And the one that remains, which certainly your listeners, I would assume, know about and should know about, is the streamlined program. That one started, I think it was in 2014, if I'm not mistaken. Mm-hmm. I didn't check this morning, but something like that. So it's been around for a while. So if people are only hearing about U.S. tax filing obligations, I mean, your organization is, you know, doing a service to kind of shake the bushes or, you know, post notices or stand outside public events and hand out flyers. I don't know how you do it exactly, but it's what the worst thing for a taxpayer is to not know and to sort of be blindsided and to have the, you know, the U.S. government sending them nasty notices and threatening things. It's always best to get ahead of it. But the Streamline program still works very well. It has sort of two wings to it for U.S. persons living in the U.S. and for U.S. persons living abroad, like your listeners. And that's not a bad system. It's really not. I'm sure you have described it in other podcasts. I can if you like, but it is a good system to get people back into compliance. And then, of course, you know, it just becomes the annual drudgery of doing their tax return and other forms every year and not forgetting it.
Can you give a short outline of what Streamline is? What it means, how it works?
Sure. So the Streamlined program for persons living abroad is essentially, even though, and I guess this is good to know, if you never file a tax return, this is true, I suspect, in most jurisdictions. It's certainly true with the IRS. It's also true with all of the states that have tax systems, including California, where I live, New York State, where I do a lot of work as well. So if you never file a tax return, there is no statute of limitations. Statute of limitations is, you know, a kind of a hallmark legal concept that at some point it becomes too late for the government to complain. And with tax authorities like the IRS, if you file a return, you know, even if it's wrong, you file a return, you think it's correct. Once generally 3 years goes by after you file, it's too late for the IRS to say, you know, you made mistakes. There are lots of exceptions, like everything in the tax world. There are many, many IRS rules that allow them to go back 6 years and many rules that allow them to go forever. But the concept basically is 3 years. So the Streamline program says we're not going to worry about all those past years, you know, Mr. Person Living Abroad, that you should have filed U.S. taxes. We're only going to focus on the last 3 years. So please give us 3 tax returns. Go back, find, you know, your records, prepare 3 U.S. tax returns and 6 FBARs. The FBARs don't require a payment. That's simply the foreign bank account reporting form. It's actually, I'm not even sure it's called an FBAR anymore. Colloquially, it's called that, but it's now FinCEN Form 114. FinCEN is Financial Crimes Enforcement Network, which has a very threatening name, part of the U.S. Treasury Department, connected to the IRS, but separate. And so you file 6 of those saying, you know, I had this bank account in Germany. I had this bank account in, you know, in the Netherlands or wherever. You list all your bank accounts. You list your account numbers, the institution account number and ending balance for the year. And it's informational. I know it's annoying, but it's required. And you file 6 of those, 3 tax returns or amended tax returns if you filed them before, and you basically submit a statement of non-willfulness. I live abroad. I didn't know about this. I first found out about it recently. I hired a tax lawyer or an accountant, and I fixed it, and I'm sorry. I'll start filing again. I mean, it's almost that simple, and you send it in. And normally unfortunately, you need to send them money, but that depends on how much tax you owe. So if you owe tax, maybe you don't. I've seen some that don't owe any if you claim foreign tax credits. But typically, the foreign tax credit system, doesn't work perfectly. Typically, there's an amount due, but you pay that amount and you have to pay, you pay interest and you pay, I think you pay a 20% penalty on the tax. I can't even remember. Maybe for a non-U.S. person, maybe you don't pay that penalty. But the important thing for a person living abroad, the important thing about the Streamline program is that there is no account-based penalty. If you live in the U.S., you pay a penalty equal to 5% of your sort of non-compliant assets, your foreign accounts. If you live abroad, you don't pay that 5% penalty. So, and in contrast, just for those of you who are interested in this historically, and I guess to show you that the Streamline program is much, much better than the old OVDP, that penalty was either 27.5%, the big penalty, 27.5% of all your foreign accounts, highest balances, or 50%. In the later years, as more and more banks reach deals, Swiss and many other countries reach deals with the IRS and deferred prosecution and so on, many, many banks, all the big ones, had a 50% penalty. So if you had, you know, $1 million, your life savings at, you know, UBS or Credit Suisse or HSBC or somewhere, the OVDP would say, not only do you have to pay all the taxes and the interest and the regular penalties, but you have to pay 50% of your account balance. So, I mean, the Streamline program, which I didn't describe very well, but I would urge people, if you're not compliant, to look at it, you know, talk to someone about it, look at the IRS website and try to get into compliance so that in the future you don't have a surprise.
Yeah, we totally agree. We are trying to give a lot of information to people who are not aware of this US tax liability. But this is a kind of hard. It might sound funny, but it is not, because the local government says, well, it's not about our people, it's about US persons. So they are US citizens, and why should we publish information for them? And there is some kind of thing at the US government that the US government seems to think that every US citizen is supposed to know this. So there's a huge gap, and we are not trying to get everybody in compliance, but we're trying to give information so that everybody is aware and can make their own choices. But can you explain why the US government thinks or assumes or wants to think that every US citizen has to know this? They don't give information. There is no information push to this US citizens abroad.
Yeah, you just said a couple of important things, I think. And number one about, you know, why does the U.S. government assume everyone knows and everyone should know? I'm not able to answer that. I think I am in a rather, as you can tell, sort of insular world, kind of myopic, focused on these things. So it's hard for me to sort of divorce myself from it and say, you know, what is the average person living abroad? You know, what contact, if any, would they have with these issues? I don't know. But the other important thing I think you just said was, which I should stress as well, that, you know, there's sort of no one size fits all kind of solution here. And it is not, I mean, I can't advise someone as a U.S. tax lawyer, I can't advise a client, you know, don't worry about it, they're probably never going to find you. I can't advise someone of that. And unfortunately, there are risks involved, obviously. But I mean, it is true that some people may think about sort of weigh, once they have the information that you're trying to provide, they may weigh the risks, the costs, and say, you know what, I would rather run the risk than sort of get into the IRS system. Generally, I don't think that's a wise decision, but it's certainly, you know, not my decision. And it can be okay for some people, as long as they're, you know, prepared, as long as they think about it carefully and kind of look at their own circumstances and their own family. The other element of something like this is, you know, family members. I tend to think something like 95% of U.S. sort of regular, you know, income tax returns by married persons are filed jointly. So spouses, You know, it's sort of one big pool. And yet it's also, you know, perfectly legal for married persons to file separate returns, married filing separate, it's called in the U.S. And if you have, you know, two people, whether they live in the U.S. or somewhere else, you know, they should think about that. And it's especially worrisome, I think, for non-U.S. persons, because what if you have an American citizen living, you know, living in Germany and a spouse who's a German or other citizen, not a U.S. person? Frequently, I find people kind of make the mistake of filing jointly, even though the German, in my example, doesn't have a U.S. filing obligation. And then they're sort of sucked into the system. And yet, so there are a lot of decisions like that. And I wish it was simple, but it, you know, it isn't, I'm afraid.
Now, what we as an organization have always set central is the right for people to know about their obligation. And we never advise anyone not to file, nor do we push people to file. So we are of the opinion that if someone knows about their obligation, it's their obligation to take a decision or whether or not to become compliant. The complexity, however, is that one can say, okay, I'm never going to travel to the US. I have no lines to the US, so I'm staying off the grid. I'm not filing. Problem, however, is that since there is FATCA, and maybe you can tell a little bit about what that is, the banks in your home country, so in Germany or in Holland, are now having the obligation to ask you about your U.S. person status. And in a way, there are some banks that are saying, well, you have to declare that you are compliant.
Yep.
Or at least you have to show your social security number. So you have to get into the system to be able to remain having a bank account and any kind of bank service in your home country. What we see is that since like 2 years now, banks in Europe are very, very actively looking for US persons under their bank account clients. Based on the fact that, you know, someone has to declare where he or she is born when they open a bank account. And if that is a U.S., that's a U.S. birthplace, then you're on the radar of the bank. Even if they don't have that, they will always automatically ask about, are you born in the U.S. or do you have a U.S. parent? Are you a U.S. person or do you have a green card?
Yeah.
And then you are in the system. You know, so it is becoming more complicated for everybody to say, well, I try to stay off the grid.
No, I agree with you. And again, I think, I mean, long term, I'm trying to be judicious in my remarks so that someone doesn't feel that they are that they have no choices. But as a practical matter, I'm not sure there is much of a choice, candidly. I've been, as you can tell, I mentioned to you when we spoke before, the vast sort of avalanche of people coming into compliance has already passed. And it's more of a, you know, sort of light snowfall now. Occasionally, a person who, you know, notwithstanding your efforts, your good efforts to educate people, occasionally someone, you know, says, I had no idea I was supposed to be filing U.S. taxes and that kind of thing. But FATCA, as you described it, the Foreign Account Tax Compliance Act, was another, I don't know, a second shot heard around the world, I suppose. It was passed in 2010, so 2 years after the 2008 UBS, you know, issues really came to the forefront, and all the other banks thereafter. So FATCA was passed in 2010. I mean, it's a revolutionary law. It was considered by many people unconstitutional. I was an expert witness in a case in Canada that was Canadian, brought by Canadian citizens, essentially suing the Canadian government to have FATCA declared unconstitutional in Canada. That lawsuit failed. I think there may have been similar ones in the U.S. But I mean, it's a by all I think, any measure. It's a revolutionary U.S. law that essentially puts, as you described, all non-U.S. banks on notice that they get penalized in all sorts of ways if they don't fork over the names and, you know, if they don't basically enforce the U.S. tax law. It was the Obama administration, I mean, did a, I don't know if this is good or bad, but did an astonishing job behind the scenes with all these meetings with foreign governments. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's, I guess it's too bad it happened, but it did. And it was, it passed in 2010, but it really didn't take effect until 2015. And you're quite right. I mean, if you are a person living abroad, I mean, unless you hide your American status, never use your passport, lie on all the forms, which is never a good idea, and by the way, is can be considered tax evasion in the U.S., you know, you've got to do these things. So I don't think there's an answer. I mean, listeners won't like this, I guess. I don't think there's an answer other than, you know, comply, because that's the system. And some people, and I've certainly represented some people decide, look, my whole life is in, you know, X or Y country. You know, some people have multiple passports. The U.S. is only one of them. And it may be in all, you know, in all ways, truly the archetypal accidental Americans. And that sort of a person not infrequently says, I don't want this anymore. I want to give it up. And so one of the great ironies is that to give it up, you have to comply with the IRS tax system. So my experience with lots of clients in multiple countries is that there is a way to do that. I mean, I've certainly been through the process. There is, and I've had clients who expressly go through one of these IRS programs and get into U.S. compliance only so they can get rid of their passport. My experience, however, is that most people that I've represented who do that, who actually say, okay, I'm going to do all this, rigmarole and pay some money, but then I'll finally be able to sort of rip the Band-Aid off and get rid of this problem. I found that most people, once they've been through the process, end up deciding, well, maybe I'll need it for something. And if I have to basically keep filling out forms once a year, it's not so bad. It's not that expensive, and I'll just live with it. And then, you know, that as opposed to if they have significant wealth, there's the U.S. exit tax, which so it's there's no easy answer other than kind of get in line. And, you know, if that makes you a sheep, I guess I'm a sheep too. So
yeah, I think we're all sheeps at the end of the day. What we, however, see is, and that is also based on a lot of misinformation, is that people are saying, okay, I'm going to renounce. They are not aware of the fact that even though they are renounced, if they don't become compliant, tax compliant first, they will stay a tax sheep, so to speak, for another 10 or so years. So a lot of people are making mistakes by renouncing and not making sure they are compliant. That's worrying in a way. We have shared with you a report that we that published under, or that we had a survey under about 15,000 U.S. citizens living in Germany and in Holland. Where have you? We shared it with you. Are there comments about the sometimes shocking outcome?
We shared, for examples, we shared that there is very little awareness and increasing complications at the moment. One of the problems is...
One of the biggest problems is that those people don't owe taxes in the US, but they do have filing obligations with all the, you know, hassle and costs that involves. And it makes their life, their let's say, financial life in the country where they live, very, very insecure. 75% of the ones that answered are stating that is one of my main problems. So not so much the tax I have to pay, because I don't have to pay, which is good news, but it makes my life so insecure, because every decision I make, which normally is based on my local tax laws, the country where I live in, I have to, you know, find advice again in the US, whether that's a wise or not a wise decision to do.
And sometimes it's the decision you make for the US laws and the US, the IRS laws, they are not wise to make for the local ones. Correct. So if you are, for example, having a BV or an other business account, sometimes the decisions are not in tune with each other.
Yeah, no, you're quite right. And I do remember the servant seeing one of the kind mm-hmm. of top line was a surprising lack of awareness. Again, I'm in a rather insular role or world, given what I see. And I tend to think, and unfortunately, I think the IRS probably tends to think, that the whole world became aware of these things, you know, around 2008. And by 2010, FATCA passed, 2010, the IRS, or 2009, the IRS started its massive offshore account and compliance initiatives, collecting $50 billion, I think it was, over 10 years. So I don't know. I mean, you are saying that lack of awareness in Europe and elsewhere, you know, maybe there was an initial wave, but that it's died down, and just on the street, people are not complying or not aware they need to comply. And I suppose if they're mm-hmm. aware of it, they have the kind of an anvil falling on their head regularly by being in this, you know, comparative tax role, thinking, well, wait a minute, it makes sense for me now in Belgium to do the following, but there are U.S. tax disadvantages. So every decision becomes, it's kind of a two-pronged problem. One thing, something Linda just said that I should stress about business entities. So if you have entities, you know, you have a company that you hold investments in, or you have a company that you run some kind of a business, that adds to your problems from a U.S. perspective. It adds to the forms you need to file, because mm-hmm. it may be that the business, because you are an American, let's say an American and a European, it may be that you have to file tax returns for the business in the U.S. as well, or at least file a dreaded form. I should mention the number, IRS Form 5471. It's essentially a form that you file if you're an American and you have a foreign business. It's a really important form to file. And it's one of the forms that if you fail to file it, your individual entire tax return is subject to examination forever.
Yeah. You know, what is striking us as a team on a daily matter is that we are now in this subject for like 6 years. And every day.
Eight
years. Every day, the phone and the email and what have you is filled with shocked people living somewhere in Europe or anywhere in the world that are now, you know, became aware of the fact that they have to file taxes. And we find it a shame that the U.S. government, whether it is the consulate in the country where you live or anything, anywhere else, you know, is not doing any effort whatsoever to protect their own citizens for doing things they simply don't know. I mean, if I drive on a highway in the U.S., every like 2 miles, I will see a sign saying the speed limit is 55 miles. Well, thank you for reminding me. Why are they not doing that? And again, it is still, it's not that it became less. The number of people coming to us for help is still the same, which implicates that there's a huge number of people that are simply not aware of it.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I think the big wave is already over, because the big wave, there were the wealthy ones and the people who are scared and they had a lot to lose. And now we have the wave, the little wave, but the little wave is still thousands of people. So, and one is enough to have a wave of normal citizens, and especially those normal citizen with a basic income and a mortgage and two children and nothing more, the burden for those families, they are very high, because they just simply don't understand. One of the remarks on the survey was, the compliance procedure is a nightmare. I don't understand a word of it. I don't talk any English. US tax system is a disgrace. And this is not because of what they think about the US or the IRS, and it's not because it's just pure panic. And we are searching as an organization for a way to inform those people who are not understanding and not believing this, and also don't have the feeling that they're on a risk, and they are.
Yeah.
And again, Robert, that would really be something to think about, whether, I mean, your active role in publishing about subjects like this in the US or internationally, that would really be of great help to make more awareness in the US. These people are not tax evaders. They simply have their life. They are not even expats. Often they have their lives in somewhere in the world. They have an American parent, or they by coincidence were born in the US, are simply not aware of the fact that they have to file taxes. And then boom, this comes out of nothing and has immediate big implications for their life, whether it is, you know, the bank don't want to have them anymore, their local bank. I mean, what can you do without a bank account nowadays in the country where you live in? So that would be of great help if there is more awareness about.
I understand. And what Linda said, kind of the big wave and the little wave, it sounds right. I mean, I think generally, there are obviously exceptions on both sides, but generally, people with significant assets,
they follow the financial news, so they know.
Have good advisors
Exactly. And so it really is, I mean, I have compassion for people who are living, as you say, are living their lives, and suddenly, maybe through your outreach, they become aware of this. And there's a lot of incredulity, I guess. There's I'm sure, a lot of people who don't believe it, who, you know, and kind of, and I've unfortunately been in the role, as maybe sometimes you are, of saying, you know, gosh, don't shoot the messenger.
This is the bad news.
This is the system. But, and I would also say, and this is, again, I'm afraid a problem that doesn't have much of a solution, but I would suspect that some of the people that you are talking with, maybe reluctantly, then conclude, well, I need to do something, and so I'll start filing. And some people don't do it correctly, don't do it completely. They might file tax returns,
absolutely,
but not file the other forms, such as FBARs.
The FBAR.
Mm-hmm. And so, and in some cases, such a person, a well-meaning person, may actually end up worse off than if they had done nothing. So it really is it's kind of a maze sometimes. But I mean, I think education is maybe the best remedy that you can provide.
It's very important. Do you have, from your perspective and from your experience, do you have the tip of the day, the tip for those people who are listening our podcast at the moment? They are maybe at the, well, do I believe it or not stage, or what shall I do stage, or it is not about me, or I am compliant but I hope it will end soon stage. Do you have, from your perspective and from your experience, the golden tip for those people, for our listeners?
Oh gosh, I would say the first tip would be, if you have, and maybe this is not most of your listeners, but if you have some kind of notice or contact from the IRS take it seriously. And because some small number of your listeners probably have had something. And my advice is don't simply throw it away. We all put things off. You know, all of us do. All of us don't want to deal with some things. But if you have something like that, whatever it is, pay attention and get some advice. Even if the advice turns out to be, you know, don't do anything, it's better not to worry about it. And some of those notices can be extremely important. I guess the second tip would be what you've been saying all along, which is get informed, inform yourself, however you do that. And it may be, not to overly stress this, but it may be consider the IRS Streamlined program for, you know, non-US persons. Incidentally, I have seen there's a requirement about living abroad, and there's a certain, I don't remember offhand, a certain number of days that you have to live abroad, like basically at least the last year out of the 3 years or something. It's a little more complicated than that, but it's not, if you're living abroad, you're going to meet the living abroad test. I have seen some people in the U.S. who have said, I want to do the streamlined, but I'm looking at the penalties, and the penalties for someone living abroad are basically no penalties. And the penalties, if I live in the U.S. and do the same forms, the streamlined, 5% of my accounts. Therefore, I'm moving back to Europe and I'm going to, you know, and then I'm going to file. And I've seen some people do that. So, you know, I guess you could theoretically be at risk during that period that you are moving and so on. But that's a good example. You know, try to make the system work for you. Look at it. Get some advice. And don't just bury your head, because it's not a good solution.
It won't go away. That's the experience I personally also had. You know, it won't go away. And once you grab it and you get some help, it's no big fun, but it's less of a stress.
Think of the IRS like banned chemicals or something like DDT. The IRS is not going away.
Exactly.
No, absolutely.
Great, Robert. We really appreciated having your view on it, your professional view on it.
My pleasure.
Again, you know, we can only ask you, get the word out there, because it would be great that if we are not the only ones trying to get this bad news spread around. Again, thank you very, very much for your insights.
My pleasure.
Yeah, thank you so much for joining.
Thank you.
For everyone who has still questions, hopefully not, but please do check our websites, www.woodllp.com and americansoverseas.org. Thank you. Thank you, Robert. Thank you, Dan. And thank you, listeners. Until next time.